Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Darren Schneider from Bismarck, North Dakota on the show. Darren owns a custom rod making company, and he and his wife, Heidi, have had a good run of walleye tournament fishing the last handful of years, more specifically fishing the North Dakota division of the AIM Walleye Series in the last 4 years in a row, qualifying for the national championship in that series. And we talk a lot about that, you know, just getting to know Darren. And Heidi's a big part of this story as well. And, you know, in recent years, they decided to fully commit, completely commit to, you know, putting away the old walleye fishing perspective and go all out with forward-facing sonar as the central focus of their, you know, tournament fishing or just their daily walleye fishing strategy. And, you know, what that looks like. I think it's a really impactful story for a lot of people that are out there probably that have been using forward sonar, maybe just got it, and you're trying to figure out how, you know, how it's going to change your fishing or how it's going to find and catch you more fish. And I think Darren and Heidi's story is a unique one, and definitely there's a lot to take away from it. So let's get into this here. We've got Darren Schneider, Bismarck, North Dakota, walleye fishing. Let's do it. The spring open water fishing season is upon us here in North Dakota, and a few things to remember as anglers when we're getting our boat out for the first time, especially on the river systems: the dangerously cold water temperatures, and you know what, the air temperatures. Fishing is all about having fun. Some of the most phenomenal fishing opportunities are going to be happening now for the next couple of months. Be prepared for some of those mild emergencies. Dress warm, dress in layers, at least bring layers along. But definitely be wearing your life jacket. It can be life and death in a bad situation. Another recommendation, if you're fishing on the river, fish upstream of where you launch your boat. That way, if you have engine troubles or driving the boat at all just is an impairment, the current of the river will float you back down to your vehicle. If you don't, if you go downstream and you have troubles, your problems get a whole lot bigger and a lot more time consuming. Clean, drain, dry is always the program here in North Dakota. For new rules and regulations for the 2024 open water season, check all that out at North Dakota Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov/fishing. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their Eye Candy Kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy Kit. Where does this all begin for you, man? Where are you from? Where were you born and raised? Where were you introduced to fishing? Give me your, like, fishing story, man. Go ahead. We'll start there.
Obviously, been fishing since I was a kid with my old man. I remember going out in our little 14-footer with a 10-horse. I think it was legitimately a Montgomery Ward tiller, you know. And then we upgraded to a 16-footer with a 25-horse Merc, and it just progressed to there. Always ran tillers my entire life. You know, my old man was mostly a walleye fisherman, and I always wanted to cast like a typical kid. I didn't want to pull cranks. I didn't want to throw bottom bouncers. You know, I didn't want to do any of that stuff. So I was always casting or pitching jigs or whatever. And it just progressed to there. I bought my first tiller, 16-foot tiller, when I was a junior in high school, financed it to the hilt, you know, for what job I had and, you know, had worked my tail off just enough to make sure that I had enough gas money to go fishing whenever I could. So, I got really, really into walleye fishing for a few years. And then I got married, moved out to Wisconsin, and started fishing bass hardcore out there because I had the opportunity to fish bass, I had the opportunity to fish crappies, you know, panfish, do some other stuff, which I mean, it's not that it's not here in North Dakota, but it, you know, it wasn't the river, it wasn't the lake. It was, you know, I had all this opportunity out in Wisconsin, these small lakes, and we lived in Madison, so it was 5 minutes from little lakes. You go catch smallies all day long, and perch and bluegills and crappies, and lived out there for 5 years and never touched the Fox River, never touched the Green Bay, never touched Winnebago, never touched any of that stuff. And now I look at it and it's like, what the heck did I just do? You know, I mean, what, 6 hours, 7 hours from Lake Erie? Never went, never had really an interest to go. And then
was it the same back then though? Like was all the, you know, the notoriety, was the fishing, you know, like that crazy back then anyways? Or?
Yeah, it was. And I remember my ex-wife was deciding on where to go to school. And it's like, where are we going to move? Where are we going to move? And I remember pulling up, you know, at the time it was the PWT. The PWT was here in on the river. And I remember pulling up the list of all the PWT anglers. And it was like, you know, the top 40 in the championship in 97, 98, whatever it was, 96, 97. And I remember thinking, out of the top 40, there's like 20 guys or 17 guys or whatever it was from Wisconsin. I'm like, we need to move to Wisconsin. That's where I need to go to be in the mix. It's like, if those guys are from Wisconsin, that's where we need to be. I didn't know anything. I mean, you know, I'm 48 years old. There was no social media back then, Taylor. I mean, it was like, you know, you tried to read, you tried to keep up on stuff, but for the most part, it was time on the water, hours spent, you know, paying attention to stuff. And you know, as the guy got older, drastically changed, as we'll get into. But so we moved out there, and I transitioned to bass fishing because it was just so much fun and such a challenge, and it was so new. And then in 2003 we came back here and got a bigger tiller, started hitting the river hardcore, started hitting the lake hardcore, and just really trying to expand a little bit. Never really fishing a ton of tournaments at that time, you know, two or three a year, just because I couldn't find that guy, couldn't find that partner, couldn't really find anybody that was willing to put in the effort and the time and the money and everything. And I didn't have the money anyway, but I couldn't find that guy that was willing to put the dedication in like I was. So I took a step back and just really never did it until 5-6 years ago. And that's when things really met my wife now, in 12 years ago. And she's like, I'm not fishing. You know, we go out on the river, had a Lund LE, which was my first council boat, but the old LE had that council way in back, single council, felt like a tiller, but still had the power, had a 200 on there. So I still had speed and a little bit and a huge deck like a tiller. And, went out fishing, and all she wanted to do was sit there for a couple of years, and then finally got her, put a rod in her hand and fished for a year. And basically I kept her on bass and pike, and that philosophy of keep her on fish, keep her active, keep her doing something so she stays interested in it. You know, we'd go up to the lake in the springtime and cast for pike. And I remember going up there and, you know, catching 15, 20 pike a day in that 40 plus class range, you know, that 38 to 41 inch fish. And so that kept her active, you know. Didn't go fish smallies on Skokie, fish smallies on Audubon and New Johns and some of these small lakes. And, you know, I had that Lund, so it was easy to hit some of the small lakes with gravel. You didn't have to worry about, you know, tearing up a fiberglass boat. So we just progressed into that. And I just, that walleye tournament itch just kept scratching. And finally it's like, I told her one day, I was like, I signed this up for a name tournament. And she's like, what? And I'm like, yep. I was like, we're fishing it. And she's like, well, whatever. I didn't really care. So she didn't really care. Went out there and we pre-fished, had a decent pre-fish, found a pattern with some wind, and obviously game day came, wind changed, sun was out, there was no wind to speak of, but those fish were still there. And first fish she boated was 28 3/4, I think, which that fish sparked that competitive edge in her. And she's been a competitive person her entire life, but you know, as we get in our 40s, it's a little tougher to compete with physical activities and everything else. So this really sparked her competitive nature, and I realized I had a partner that was willing to put in the time and effort that I was. So that was really where it started. Unfortunately, we missed most of the AIM series that year. We were able to fish two tournaments. I think we finished sixth and then a second the following tournament down on the Oahe. You know, so fishing two tournaments, cashing two checks, being on the podium, you know, that was, then it was game on. Next year we're going out and we're doing this hardcore, and then and it just kept on from there.
You know, that's such a big drastic jump. You know, I mean, you go from just being a real, you know, you're a passionate angler, like we all are. We all yep. try to spend all of our disposable income and time into our yep. hobby of fishing as much as we can. And, you know, the thought of entering a tournament every once in a while is pretty cool. You know, usually you get hyped up with your fishing buddies or whoever, and it's like, yeah, man, we've been doing good the last couple of years. We should test our mettle in a tournament. Yep. But it sounds like maybe you knew long ahead of that, that one day you were going to make some this type of jumper. One day you knew, you know, before you die, you gotta give this a bit of a try. Tell me a little bit about that. Did you have like mentors? Were you fishing with people already where you were talking about tournament strategy? Like, what was your idea about, you know, what a fishing a tournament was like? I mean, I kind of want to hear a little bit about that.
You know, really, I grew up fishing with my dad a lot. And he really just didn't have that tournament deal. And like I said, they never did find anybody that really did. It was always there. And I always, you know, you always have that dream as a competitive angler and one, you know, it's like one day I'm going to fish the, you know, at the time it was a PWT and NWT now, and, you know, be a professional angler. And you see that glitz and that glamour, and you want to be part of that. And then and you see these guys, and you want to be part of that, but you're right. It's humbling. You sit there and you look at it and you're like, can I compete? Can I compete? You see those big numbers and you're like, I don't know that I can compete with that. So you know, you get all hyped up and then you kind of back out and you kind of back out. And my first NWT event was up at Skokie a few years ago. And I remember having that imposter syndrome where I'm floating around looking at all these guys that I've seen, all Keith Cavias to Gary Parsons, seeing these guys that I've seen forever and going, somebody's going to realize that I don't belong here. And after day one, I got over that. But so I didn't really ever have anybody that, you know, was never kind of fished alone a lot, fished with a buddy of mine. And he really didn't have a whole lot of interest in tournament fishing. So it just, it was always there and it was always in the back of my mind. And I always knew that I wanted to do it and I had the drive to do it. I needed that little bit of push and a little bit of backing and support from a partner that I knew was going to be there no matter what, you know, was going to put in the time. And that's where Heidi really, really came into play and really made me the angler I am today. I mean, the leaps and bounds, you know, we talked about, like I said a little bit ago, you talk about being able to read and back in the day and not having the disposable information that we do now. I mean, now it's, you know, I listened to Mark Kortz here a little while ago, and like he said, he goes, the availability of having the research on the internet and then technology, you don't need to sit on a paper map. You don't need to. You can. You don't need to sit on a paper map and look at that, research it, and talk to, you know, go down to the local bait shop and talk to all these guys. You have everything literally in your pocket on a mini computer. So, I mean, and that really pushed me even farther. You know, it was, we did a lot of trolling, we did a lot of baiting, we did a lot of, because that's how I grew up doing it, you know. And then Garmin come along, and as me and Heidi started tournament fishing, you know, it's like upgrade graph, upgrade boats. I mean, we've been married 7 years now, and we got married in a Nitro on the river, and I think nice. So it just kept every penny I had, I was able to spend, and she was good with that. She didn't care, or she didn't know until she listens to this that
yeah. Going. Totally. So. I'm so glad my wife doesn't listen to this either, man. I'm telling you, oh man. That's such a unique story for everybody. And that's kind of usually an inspirational part of somebody's story, you know, like yours. You know, people listen to this that, you know, I encourage people to derby fish or, you know, fish something competitive, you know, not necessarily go, you know, to the highest level, certainly right away, but like, you know, find an opportunity to go to a tournament of some kind, somewhere. The little bit that I've done, I've enjoyed it so much. You meet people, but you learn so much. It's such a great investment into your future as an angler, even if you don't aspire to forever be a tournament fisherman or angler. But as a tournament angler, you've been fishing the North Dakota Ames now for, what'd you say, like five or six years?
We fished four full seasons. We fished a partial and then four full seasons, and all four seasons we've been able to qualify for the national shootout, which this year is in North Dakota. So, you know, we fished four full AIM series tournament series seasons, and have gone to Wisconsin twice and Minnesota once, and now in North Dakota. And then a number of, you know, local stuff here and there. But so after we fished that first two, it was like, we got to keep going. And Heidi was all in for it. Let's do it. You know, we upgraded boats. We upgraded electronics. Garmin came on the scene. I got a couple buddies in Wisconsin that now are on our rod team that, you know, they're like, dude, get on the Garmin stuff now, you know, and went out there. And first you get it and it's like, you look at it and it's like, you're casting on fish. It's like, yeah, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, you know? So for the first year, we tried to use it. We tried to learn and we were successful on a little bit of stuff, but it was so easy to fall back to grabbing our board rods, throwing out some offshore boards and some cranks and pulling boards when things weren't going our way or whatever. And then the second year we had Garmin, it was like, okay, we got to spend time doing this. And we started getting more successful. And obviously the more successful you get, the better you are at it, you know, and something you just touched on just a bit ago, you know, being in a tournament, if an angler wants to learn and wants to test themselves and wants to progress as an angler, a tournament, in my opinion, is a good way to a tournament series, especially is a good way to do it because you have to be out there. It's, you know, I can't tell you how many days we got up and you, whether you drive to the lake or you camping or whatever, and you get out there and it's like, the wind's blowing, it's raining. And it's like, it doesn't matter. We have to be out there. We got 3 days to break this water down. And the thought of falling on your face is something. I remember a tournament that me and Heidi and a buddy of mine fished. You know, I think it was the first year that we did the AIM. We fished the last call tournament, and we took a gamble, went to a spot that I thought was going to pay off, and we came in with one fish. And I remember going up, and there was big bags caught that day, and I remember going up to the scales with that one fish, and I'm like, I don't want to ever feel like this again. And it was that feeling that humbled you to go, I'm going to go out there. No, I don't care if the wind's blowing. I don't care if it's raining, because come game day, you can't control it. You can't control the wind. You can't control the weather. You can't control, you know, who's in your spot or the conditions or whatever. So going out there and testing yourself, putting yourself against the elements makes you be a better angler instead of that guy that's like, eh, it's Saturday and yeah, I'm not going, you know? So if you want to learn, do it. So that's where the tournament stuff pushed us. And then, like I said, we could see Garmin was leading the way, and we dedicated ourselves to it and started getting better at it. And then we went out to Miltona, Minnesota for the AIM Nationals. And first day we did fairly well. We're sitting in fourth and Tom Wynn and Nate come up there with, I can't even remember how many pounds. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, and we got just waxed, and it was like, all right, we need to dedicate more into this. And then we started learning more, started being more successful. And then last year we just decided last year was the first time ever that it was, okay, we're throwing six rods, eight rods, we're throwing our jigging rods and our light rods in the boat. We're not even taking any trolling rods. We're not taking no live bait rods. We're not taking none of that stuff. We're legitimately going out there and casting at fish, you know, and to backtrack just a little bit, the first two years, you know, Garmin's not cheap. You know, we had one in the front, and we'd go out there and we'd target a fish, and I'd be like, Heidi, 6 o'clock, 50 feet, you know, and I'd point out there and she's like, right there. I'm like, yep. And she'd cast, and I'd turn and start looking for another fish. And I never paid attention to what, you know, what her fish were doing, if they were chasing it, if they weren't, you know, how they were reacting to it. I'd just go look off my fish, and she'd make 3-4 casts, and she's like, are they still there? And I'd turn back. I'm like, nope, they're gone. You know, and after about a half a season, I'm like, all right, she earned this, you know? So, I actually bought it right before the, state championship at, on Devil's Lake for Ames State Championship. We went up there and set it in the back of the boat and turned it on. I'm like, all right, this is the settings. This is, you know, gain up and down, this and that. Obviously, you know how the pole works because she worked the front of the boat a little bit. And I'm like, have fun, you know, and kind of just, and unfortunately I kind of just threw to the wolves on the deal and went back to my tournament mode of trying to break down water and trying to find fish, and really didn't give her the proper deal for the first day or two. And then finally, I think it was like day two, she comes over. She's like, all right, I get all this stuff. She's like, this is a rock. I'm like, yep, these are trees. I'm like, yep. She's like, this is a rock, this is a rock. She's like, this is a fish, right? And I'm like, yeah, 100%. She's like, okay, this is a fish. I'm like, yep, yep. She's like, these two over here are fish. I'm like, yep. She's like, what is this really bright spot back here on the backside of the tree? I'm like, that's a really big fish. And picks up a rod, jigging a crawler, pitches it out there, whack, 30 inches.
There we go.
And it was like, oh, that was cool. And then it was like, it wasn't at that point, it wasn't just casting on fish. It was casting on those brighter marks. And then fast forward, we go to Miltona, we get waxed by Tom, we start paying attention, start looking at this stuff, really start looking at things. And it's like, okay, there's a brighter mark. We cast in that fish, boom, you catch fish. It's like, okay, you need to start paying attention to this stuff. And I credit my progression of being more versed to her, because she didn't know no better. She didn't know no better all the way through this entire thing of, you know, I remember one time she's like, hey, can I use this jig? I'm like, yep. I didn't even know what she had on. Didn't even look, didn't pay attention, did nothing. She picked up a snap jig and we were in five, six foot of water, little 3/8 ounce snap jig. And all of a sudden she's like, got one. And I go back there, 26 inch fish. And I'm like, what are you using? She's like, snap jig. I'm like, the water's 45 degrees. She's like, so? I'm like, huh. Okay. All of a sudden got another one. I'm like, huh. Okay, well, the water might be 45 degrees, but those fish are sitting in the sun. They're sitting in the warm, shallow water. They're aggressive. And she came onto something. And my closed-mindedness wasn't, you know, I was pitching, jigging a plastic like I normally do. And watching her outfish me numerous times with unconventional tactics really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff and made me start realizing a bunch of stuff. And, you know, and again, to her credit, she didn't know any better, but willing to try something, you know, and that and the combination of understanding and communicating and everything else, I think it really progressed us. And she's got an amazing dedication on when she finds a fish she wants to catch. It's crazy, Taylor. It's we're up at Devil's Lake two years ago, and she's like, stop the boat, anchor it up, stop. We stop, and she's like, look at this fish. And there was like this big old tree crown, you know, old root system, and it was just giant. I mean, it was 40 feet out, you could see it. It was just this giant fish. And I'm like, have at it. And 45 minutes later, she caught probably 6 or 7 other walleyes in that 18 to 22 inch range. About 45 minutes later, boated a 30 incher and cast it on that fish for 45 minutes till she caught it. And we let that fish go. It was day one of the tournament. Went back there on day one of pre-fishing of 7. Went back there on day 2 and that fish was there. Never touched it. Went back on day 3. It was there. Never touched it. Day 4 wasn't there. Day 5 it was there. Last day of practice it was there. Never casted on it. But it was about 40 miles away from our primary spot. So we went down to our primary spot and I remember going through there and she's like, stop the boat. Cast. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm on it. I'm not, you know, and this is a different area completely. Whack, 28 inches. That saved our day. But it was an hour casting on that one fish until she got it to go.
Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their Eye Candy Kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy Kit. Now, Devil's Lake, North Dakota is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. We talk about the fishing all the time on this show, but to find out what the lake and the community has to offer, which is way more than we ever talk about on this show, you can head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. Also, our favorite, the fishing tab. It's going to give you real-time fishing reports, directions to fish cleaning stations and boat landings and shore fishing piers, which are awesome, by the way. Also, it's going to give you a list of options for boat rentals or guide services and bait shops. Everything that you need to plan your next adventure in Devil's Lake is at devilslakend.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. The spring open water fishing season is upon us here in North Dakota, and a few things to remember as anglers when we're getting our boat out for the first time, especially on the river systems: the dangerously cold water temperatures, and you know what, the air temperatures. Fishing is all about having fun. Some of the most phenomenal fishing opportunities are going to be happening now for the next couple of months. Be prepared for some of those mild emergencies. Dress warm, dress in layers, at least bring layers along. But definitely be wearing your life jacket. It can be life and death in a bad situation. Another recommendation, if you're fishing on the river, fish upstream of where you launch your boat. That way, if you have engine troubles or driving the boat at all just is an impairment, the current of the river will float you back down to your vehicle. If you don't, if you go downstream and you have troubles, your problems get a whole lot bigger and a lot more time consuming. Clean, drain, dry is always the program here in North Dakota. For new rules and regulations for the 2024 open water season, check all that out at North Dakota Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov/fishing. You're kind of like the yin and yang there, where you're the guy that has all the experience and all the memories, and you're like so many of us that would get to, you know, that would fish as many years, or, you know, I don't know how old you are, but you've been fishing a lot of this water, you know, like so many of us, we've got all these, you know, we're set in our ways, right? Like, why wouldn't we be? We have memories of success, you know, like that's so much of fishing is creating a pattern. We got to fish with some confidence. We got to have we got to be confident in some way, shape, or form with what we can do. But there's definitely like a separation where, you know, like the better tournament anglers, just the better anglers in general are more, you know, just students of the game, and they're willing to learn all the time. And, you know, one point that I just really like to make, you know, in hearing that story, you know, to make this point that the fish don't care who you are. So it's awesome that your wife, Heidi, doesn't have like so many years of experience as you, but, you know, she can fish with confidence. You give her that freedom. Don't be that guy that stifles her, you know, like her motivation 100%. And what she's doing. And then when she does have success, you know, you're humble enough to, you know, this is, I think, tough for a lot of people. Like, it definitely is tough for a lot of people to set a little bit of your ego aside and say, maybe there's something to this, you know, what she's got going on that day. Because you're right, like with walleye fishing, with any kind of fishing, but with walleye fishing anglers, it's like, we're so hard and fast on some of these rules of engagement that, you know, given a time of year and a certain pattern, the fish have to be doing this one thing in this one spot. And if they're not, it's their fault. And it's their fault I didn't catch fish that day. But on tournament day, rain or shine, somebody's going to catch them. Like, if you know, you got to fish to win, somebody's going to catch them. So you got to be able to set that stuff aside, pick up on those little things. I think that's a big part of your story. I don't think that's a type of story that gets shared a whole lot. That, you know, I mean, like right now you go online, it's like, you know, forward sonar is a young man's game. And, you know, all this technology is like, it's just built, you know, it's just built for these, you know, younger anglers to figure out. That has nothing to do with it. A Garmin unit sitting in a boat doesn't care how old the operator is. It just comes down to, man, you got to be an open-minded person, I think. Like, I think that's a huge part of that story, man. I love those stories, for sure.
It is. And, you know, and last year we were on a point and in one of the tournaments, and I'm up there pitching a jig and a crawler, and she's casting a paddle tail, and it was for 45 minutes all I did was net fish and measure fish. And guy comes over and he's like, geez, must be humbling getting your butt kicked. And I'm like, you know what, this is a team effort. And that's one thing. It's like, I don't care who catches fish. And to be, you know, there's days she sits back there and she's like, what am I doing wrong, you know, or I'm putting on a clinic, you know. So But to work off each other as a teammate, and it don't matter if it's husband and wife or brothers or whatever. But like you just said, put your ego aside, put your pride aside, and go, you know, especially on a game day. But even out there just trying to learn or trying to be a better angler or whatever the case is, put your ego aside to go, hey, you know what? I just because he's catching fish, I shouldn't be jealous, shouldn't be mad. I should try to figure out and try to make myself better. You know, test yourself, go out there and test yourself and learn that stuff. Pay attention. Don't just, well, you know, he's out there kicking my butt. It's like, this isn't about kicking anybody's butt as far as, you know, your teammates go. It's about being, like you said, there was days that she put all five wayfish on a card. There was days that I put, and it didn't, at the end of the day, it didn't matter. You know,
it's a team.
It didn't matter. And bouncing ideas off each other and the communication, especially with the Garmin. I mean, there was times where, you know, I talk a lot in the boat. She doesn't. And I'm constantly throwing information back there, you know, on what's going on, changing up things, you know, where I'll have, you know, fortunately we're spoiled with the rod company. I'll have 6-8 rods sitting on the deck of the boat and 6-8 rods in the back, all rigged up, ready to go, where you find a fish that you want to cast with Garmin, and you're watching that fish. You cast a paddle tail on it and it comes up to it, swims away, grab a jig and a crawler, grab a jig and a plastic, or, you know, a minnow plastic or whatever, grab a shiver, cast a crank on it, a spoon, you know, a jigging spoon or something, keep throwing something at live bait, you know, whether it's a drop shot or a jig and a leech or whatever the case is, keep throwing on it and keep watching that fish and paying attention. But in the meantime, I'm always telling Heidi, I'm like, hey, I was like, these fish are not reacting to this jig and crawler. These fish are not reacting to the jig and crawler. And she'd be like, they're chasing the paddle tail, but they're not committing. They're chasing the paddle, you know, so it's paying attention to that. You know, back in the day, I used to pay attention to my complete surroundings. And now sometimes I feel like I'm missing out, that I'm not looking around in the, you know, to the scenery and to what's going on, but I'm still paying attention to the water with, you know, birds chasing minnows on the shoreline, minnows busting up on the water being chased by fish, you know, in the shallows or whatever. So you got to pay attention to that too, but the communication on what's going on and keying in on those fish and watching what they're doing. You know, they're chasing. Last year we had a rock pile, gravel pile program going where we were bouncing from small gravel piles on pre-fishing, and we were creaming them. She was putting on a clinic on paddle tails, and on Saturday her paddle tails just went dead, and I was throwing Wallinish Creation death jigs, and on Saturday those things came alive and just started going crazy, and she's like, I need to learn how to cast that death jig, and they're a little learning experience. And finally she's like, you know what? I'm not going to try to learn on game day. So, you know, next day, whatever. So she's like, I'm going to stick to a paddle tail. And game day came and those fish were gone. We couldn't figure it out. And it took us most of the day to figure it out, but we figured out that they went so deep into the rock piles that you had to pull them out with the death jig and catch them with a jig and a crawler. So we stood shoulder to shoulder on that boat after hours of communicating on what's going on. Well, I seen one come out of this pile. I seen one, but it went right back in. And we figured out that with an hour and a half left, we figured out that we would have to cast on that rock pile, get those fish to come out of the cover, and they would come right to the edge of those rocks, and they turn around and they go back. And as soon as I would get them to start coming out of there, she'd pitch a jig on top of them, start dropping that down, and they would feel comfortable enough to go up, grab that jig, and boom, we had them. We only had an hour left. So it was kind of like, well, we learned something that day, but it was constant communication back and forth to figure it out and not go. And we were able to fill a card mid pack, whatever, but for us, it was a win because we never gave up and we paid attention to what was going on that screen, on that Garmin. And we just kept working on it. So some of those days that we didn't do so great on the scorecard, we didn't do so great in the standings, we walked away from that and went, man, we learned a lot. And it's like, file that away. And again, you humble yourself, you test yourself, and it's a dedication to keep going, keep learning. And it's been paying off. I mean, last year our pre-fishing and the amount of calling your shots that we did was incredible. I mean, it was awesome. We, that 2 days on Devil's Lake, we drove around. It's like, all right, we are not casting on a fish unless we truly believe it's 26 inches or bigger. And the one day we casted on five fish, all five fish were over 27 inches. We only caught five. We only casted on five, and it was 12 hours.
They were the right ones.
We caught, I think, two 27s, a 29, a 30, and a 30 and a half. And it was like, okay, do we have the dedication and do we have the mental ability to go out there on game day and do it? And game day came and we couldn't find the fish. And it was like, you go back to with AIM, it's awesome because it's not just catch five fish and weigh five fish. You can upgrade all day long. So you have all day long. So time management comes into a huge play of that. So halfway, I think we drove around for 2.5 hours and never seen a fish. You know, we're driving past 24, 25 inch fish and we're not casting on them. And looking back on it now, it's like, man, did we screw up? But, you know, we set our goals high. And then after about 3 hours, like, hey, we got to get five on the card. So, you know, we 24, 23, 25, a couple 22s. And it's like, hey, we're sitting pretty good. Now let's go find the big ones. And we never were able to find that big fish, which was fine. But it felt good to dedicate yourself to that and know that you can do it. Didn't happen particularly on that day.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the thing. That's the real debate, is like whether or not you can do that, like whether or not you're willing to dedicate yourself to something like that. And I think a big part of answering that question, honestly, is can you humble yourself? Like if you're somebody on the outside looking in, like, and I just mean, if you're somebody that either has forward sonar or is debating, whether or not you're going to get it, or if you're somebody that's, whether you're going to co-sign it or not.
Yep.
You first got to be able to truly test it out. And I think that's the real debate, because we don't have to debate the technology. It's so effective. It's so fun to use. Everybody's got a different reason why they love fishing it, given their own situation and how they like to use it and species and all that. Like, those are all fun conversations too. But to really to really dedicate yourself to it, it becomes a humbling thing. And I think, the conversation around how, young people just tend to gravitate towards the technology better or easier. I think it's a psychological conversation that, I think typically, or generally speaking, the older generation, fishing, we are all so guilty of having memories, having confidence. We talk about, we got to have confidence, even if we manufacture it, we got to have it, to have to put together a good day of fishing. And a lot of that stuff is true, but don't make it cripple yourself, because we've got this technology available to us. And if you really do, it doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, or what your fishing experience level is. Just choose to dedicate yourself to it truly. And then for you guys, you go into the tournament setting, you compete, so that you put even more pressure on yourself, but it's good pressure. It's forcing you to sharpen it up. It's forcing you to really, really push it. And those lessons learned, man, like a story about, pulling fish out of structure and then following it up, your teammate following it up. I mean, I would love to do that, even on a not fishing a tournament. I would love to do that, have a story like that with my fishing partner in the boat. I mean, I got it. You got to be thinking that way.
And I think you're, you know, with the, you hit a little bit on the older generation, I think. And I think some, I get a lot of guys talk to me about it. And well, you know, we're kind of known for, we're known for driving around doing this stuff. And so I get a lot of guys, especially in the tournament series, that, you know, they're like, does that thing really work? And it's like, and I tell everybody, it's like, yes, it does, obviously. And it's proven all over across the country. And it's like, if you're not going to dedicate it and really try to learn, don't waste your money. Cause it's not a cheap endeavor by any means. You know, whether it's a tournament or whether you just want to learn or find fish, it's going to help you find fish better. It's going to learn, but if you're just going to look at it like, and it ain't no different than side scan or down scan or whatever, you can't turn it on and magically, you got a bite. You know, it's not going to happen. So if you're not going to utilize it, don't buy it. It ain't no different than, you know, any other technology. If you're not going to try to use it or try to learn, there ain't no point in doing it, you know? And I think some of the, I don't think the older generation, I'm 48. I think there's a lot of guys my age. It's not necessarily that they're humbled by it or scared by it, but it's like, I got 2 days a month I can go fish and I just want to go out and relax and catch fish, you know? And they don't want to take the time to deal with it. They don't want to take the time to learn it. I mean, I get so many people that ask me about, you know, we're switching over to Garmin completely this year. I mean, I've ran Lowrance since my very first boat. I mean, I remember black and white stuff, you know, and sitting behind that dash, learning Lowrance, learning the whole profile. And so I guys all the time say, hey, how do you do this? How do you do this? What about settings? And I had it pretty much figured out. Now I'm going, and it's scary, Taylor. I tell you what, there's been a couple times this year I've got on the ice, obviously. And there's been a couple times this year where I'm like, man, did I really mess up by, you know, stripping my Vexus down and going all Garmin? Cause there's a lot to learn. I mean, iPhone users don't want to go to Android. Android don't want to go to it. It's not. So this year we decided to take a little break from the 8, 10, 12 tournaments a year and really hone in on learning our Garmins, learning our technology throughout the entire boat. Getting back to a little bit of fun fishing and really get out there and hone our skills, really dedicate ourselves to. Last year, we had a lot of fun targeting those single fish. And we got a lot of R&D going on in the rod shop here. And we want to dedicate ourselves to that a little bit more and do some videoing and stuff like that to promote our company. And that's been a really big passion for us with, you know, with the tournaments, you want to have the best gear you can. And we're fortunate enough or glutton enough to start this venture and it's been a grind, but so this year we're going to really, and as much of a grind as it was last year and the years before, we really connected on another level as far as communication and just gelling with things. I mean, there was times we'd be going and Heidi'd be like, hey, 60 feet up in front of you, right-hand side, you know, 2 o'clock. And I'd look and I'd be like, boom. Stop the boat, boom, catch them. You know, so she was getting to the point where she's throwing fish at me and I was throwing fish at her and it'd be like, so we really, as hard as it's going to be this year sitting on the sidelines for some of this stuff, we're going to really try to hone our skills and figure some more stuff out and see if we can really dial this thing in.
I got one question talking about your story, you know, you fished your whole life, you're 48 years old, you fished your whole life, you know, prior to forward sonar. Forward sonar kind of came into your life, you know, it really humbled you. You fish tournaments, you go to the AIM National Championship 4 years in a row, and, you know, you see guys like Tom Wynn and just the people around you just really, you know, raking with it, and you just really dedicate yourself to it. I think that's a great story. But finding fish and breaking down water, you know, that's a learning curve for a lot of people. The time management with forward sonar. When you go to a new body of water and you're pre-fishing for a national championship that's in another state on a body of water you've never been on, when you're on the water, like how do you utilize forward sonar or not? Like how, where does forward sonar fit into your style of pre-fishing when you're breaking down water and how do you not let it cannibalize all your time?
Obviously, whether it's a new body of water with no information or just a new body of water in general. You know, Devil's Lake's fairly new to us, but you know, the mapping on everything is phenomenal nowadays. I mean, Garmin's got some unbelievable mapping. So you look at the mapping, you figure out the time of the year, you kind of have some, you know, some heads up of from talking to different anglers. And just, I mean, walleyes are a creature of habit to begin with. They got two goals in life, and that's to eat and to spawn, period. So, you know, depending on water temperatures and time of year, you kind of have an idea of where they could particularly be, you know, situational. And then look at your map and get on the water, go to a place that, you know, whether it's a bottleneck or some place that looks like this is kind of fishy, and drive through there, side scan, down scan, look for some structure, look for some whatever, you know, see some fish, yes or no, whatever. And literally for us last year, it's been drop the transducers, drop the forward facing sonar, the Garmins, and put the trolling motor on 6, 7, 8, 9, and just start cruising. Just start, I mean, whipping through there at 2, 2.5, 3 miles an hour, and just see what you're seeing. And spend some time really looking at what you're seeing, you know, and then start casting on fish, start pitching on fish, start dragging fish, what, you know, dragging bait or whatever the case is. But for us, it's been pitching, you know, and grab 3, 4, 5 different presentations, whether it be a jig and a crawler, jig and a leech, jig and a plastic. And I keep going back to the jig because it's so simple. It's so simple to use. Lead and red, 25-cent jigs, thin wire jigs. You lose them, you grab another rod, you cast out there, you don't even worry about it, you know. We drug crawlers around for years, and now it's like, so you drive around till you see something, stop, take a good look at it from a different angle. It's like, yep, those are walleyes, you know, mark it down in your GPS, use your GPS to really, really, you know, put in notes. My Lowrance, I was able to put in a ton of notes. Garmin's got a little different setup for notes. So I think I'm going to end up using an iPhone note to really dial it in, or literally, you know, the old fashioned pen and paper to really write stuff down to me. Cause you've got so many things going through your head all day long, you know, that it's hard to remember. You know, you put a waypoint in there and it's like, what did we do here? Pull up your notes, take a look at the notes. Oh, we did this, 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 and this, you know, it's like, and the older I get, the less memory I got for some of that stuff, especially with all the things going on during the day, you know. But check that out, and then start figuring out what they want, whether it's a jig and crawler, whether it's, you know, last year on Koshkonong, we, you know, that lake is super shallow, and most of the guys were pulling cranks. We, you know, Tom and Nate were driving around with forward facing sonar. Us and our partners were driving around forward facing sonar. We found some clam beds, and we're catching 100 walleyes a day, no problem. But it was that 17¾-inch fish, and those fish we found out from the locals. You know, locals were the guys who won it, and it's, you had to be out in the mud flats trolling. And second day we were out in the mud flats with our teammates, and you know, they really moved up in the rankings, and we got in there a little bit after them, and we caught a couple decent fish, but being able to go, okay, we're you know, this is working, but we need bigger fish. Go out there, drop the boards, and caught some bigger fish. So, you know, having the being humble to say this is working, but if you want to cash a check, you want to move off, you better grab the boards, because that's what seems to be working, you know. So and cover a bunch of water. But yeah, for us, it's getting on that trolling motor, driving around, gathering up as much information as you possibly can, and putting a pattern together. I remember Corey Sprinkle made a comment one time. He says, don't fish a spot, fish the fish. And the last couple of years, you know, like the rock pile deal last year up in Partial for the Partial Ape, we had like 17 gravel/rock piles that we knew had fish on them. And on game day, we went to all 17. And there was nothing there. You know, they were there, but they were so deep in there that you couldn't pick them out. You know, you had to go back to your instincts going, you can't go to all 17 and those fish just vacated. So gathering up all that information and trying to mentally put it together and stay focused, and time management on tournament is huge. That's one thing I think we really, we've really gotten really good at, and it's paid off for us. I mean, we've won two tournaments with 3 minutes left. We've cashed a number of checks with under 5 minutes to go, where we knew we got 42 miles. We need to have wheels up and be moving at full throttle by 45 minutes left. You know, so it's like, you need to know what's going on. You got three spots. You need to know exactly how much time it takes from spot A, B, C, D, whatever the case is, back to the boat dock. Factor in weather conditions, factor in whatever. You know, fortunately, we're running a Vexus now with that V10 400. And so we get there a little quicker now than we used to.
I imagine.
So, but factoring in all of that stuff is what it's going to take on a tournament day. Now, you know, if you're just for the guy that's going, I'm not a tournament guy, still keep track of all that stuff. Mentally note all the things that are going on. And maybe you don't get to fish 7 days in a row. Okay. You get to fish two. So go out there on day one. And it's like, you know, in the afternoon, I noticed that they just weren't there. It's like, so don't go to that 18 to 22 foot, go shallower, go see if they went shallow, you know, try something different instead of going, oh, they're not here today. And that's the nice thing about the Garmin or Lowrance or whatever, but you know, we're huge Garmin fans, is the fact that if they're not in that, let's say you're going along in 18 foot of water, you're just not seeing, you scan that out 100 foot and you're like, I'm seeing fish in 17 foot or 7 foot of water, 11 foot of water, head the boat over a little closer. I'm seeing a ton more fish over here. Okay. Mentally note that. And just, it's catching, and this, I think we talked about this earlier, and this comes across, and I don't want this to come across arrogant, and I've been saying it a lot the last couple of years, but catching fish is not hard. It is not hard at all right now. We have a phenomenal resource, especially in North Dakota. Catching fish is not hard. Catching the right fish on the right day, that's where you have to test yourself. But going out there and just catching fish, it's not hard at all, especially when you have the ability to go, you know what, I'm not seeing them in 18 foot. So you scan over with your Garmin and you're like, huh, there's a pot of fish over 11 foot. Let's move over there and we'll catch them.
Yeah.
You know, it's simple.
Yeah. I think it is, like, it comes with that experience, because I definitely think like hearing how you break down water, and you know, you're using forward sonar to break down water. That was initially, you know, just the questions that, you know, we would get on, you know, on social media or like with our video content with JMO, you know, just like, you know, when that stuff came out and Jason, we had it and we were filming with it and we're learning it ourselves, you know, for sure. But you know, like time management is difficult. And that's not even talking about like ice fishing. It's really difficult there. I mean, like hole hopping and all that, but I mean, talking about, you know, forward sonar, it can absolutely be the kiss of death. If you're not prepared to fish fast, or, you know, or not prepared to just make quicker decisions on stuff and move along, you can really eat away your day of fishing. If you just want to dissect every little thing, every little speck that you think is a fish, or whatever, or if you're just trying really hard to validate something that you think you already know, you'll spend all day just trying to validate yourself without even knowing it. You know, you'll just stick around these memories of yours and wait for those fish to show up, because in your mind, they have to be there. But, you know, taking that experience onto a new body of water, I think, is really impactful, because then, you know, you got to be able to have that open mind when you go back onto your home body of water or somewhere where you have all these memories and fish that way. Cause that's true with anything, you know, that's with or without forward sonar, fishing memories, you know, we got to get away from that. But I think, you know, like figuring out how to break down water with it, you know, whether that's somebody's strategy or not, you know, hearing how you do it and you are proficient with it. You know, I think that definitely gives people a little bit of inspiration to try something like that. Anybody that has forward sonar anyways, but, you know, getting that trolling motor hyped up, start cruising around, you know, in the areas, you know, that you've already kind of premeditated, there should be some fish around, but don't just assume they're going to be on that contour you think they are. Don't just assume that they're going to be an 18 foot, because your experience or yesterday's information tells you that's where they got to be. swing it out deep, swing it in shallow. I think about the conversations I had recently with Corey Heiser, you know, he just, you know, just some really impactful things that he, you know, experiences that he's had where, you know, just sitting on spot lock in the same spot and catching walleyes a long cast from the boat in, you know, less than 5 feet of water on one side of the boat and, you know, suspended over 45 foot of water, a long cast on the other side of the boat, you know, like that's, those are this type of stories that are just like, man, that, I mean, that's a big, big deal when that's never happened to you before. And you're out there, it's like the light bulb ought to be going off that, you know what, I've been using this thing to just try to validate myself for the first couple of years. Yep. I need to be open-minded. I need to scratch. I need to leave the live bait at home. I need to leave the trolling rods at home. The things that slow me down, the things that my vices that I'll just resort to when I don't have a fish by noon, you need to fish it right to the bitter end. And so often it takes that long to really dial something in and your best bites will be right there in that last like 2% of the day. That I don't think that's very uncommon when you have that kind of, you know, mentality and the dedication to it. I think that's true.
Well, you know, and you just, you kind of touched on something and with Corey Heiser and fishing, you know, 40 foot of water last year up at the casino tournament, we're going along this kind of a little island. Heidi's like, stop. She's like, I got a decent one. And she's like, and we didn't have much in the box. I'm like, what do you think? She's like, wow, it's a solid 22, 23, 24. And I'm like, we don't have much in the box. So I was like, catch it really quick and we'll move on. And she's casting on it. And the way the wind was, I had spot locked. And she's casting on that fish in about 22 foot of water. And I'm looking out into infinity and I'm scanning. And 80 foot of water, I'm seeing this mark and I'm like, it's not moving. It's sitting there. It's big. I don't know what it is. And I'm like, you catch that fish yet? And she's like, no, hold on. And I'm like, well, might as well cast on. I'm not doing any good. You know, I'm not going to go back there and cast on her fish and take her fish. So I'm like, okay, let's throw it. Threw it out there. Fish starts falling. Whack. I got stripped and I'm like, what the heck? And I was casting a minnow, run back, grab another minnow, cast out there and had the fish hooked. I'm like, I got him, comes loose. And I watch him and he goes down about, you know, and he was literally, it was 80 foot of water and he was down 12 foot. I go back, grab another minnow and I go up there and he's about 15 foot of water, about 70, 75 foot out. And I cast on him again and he comes rocking up, whacks that thing and end up being about a 29 inch walleye. And I was like, okay.
And that was on Skakuia.
That was up on Skakuia. Yeah. It was like, you know, so paying attention to that and being out there, whether you're a tournament guy or whether you're just a novice guy and you're going around and you're like, well, I don't know. Is this a carp? Is this a walleye? Think about carp never stop moving. You know, for the most part, they don't stop moving. They're always swimming. You know, I looked at that fish and I'm like, that fish is just suspended there. You know, it's not a, you know, we see paddlefish all the time. It's not a paddlefish. It's not a carp. It's not a, you know, it's not grouped up like a drum or a white bass or thinking not a catfish. Like, what could that possibly be but a walleye? But the doubt of, like you said, memories. Now, if Heidi would have been standing in the front of the boat and I'd have been casting or vice versa and she'd seen that fish, she wouldn't even hesitate. She'd just cast on it because, you know, God bless her. She still doesn't have those super bad habits like I got after, you know, fishing for 45 years where, you know, walleyes are on the bottom. No, they're not. They're not on the bottom. They're all over the place. And guys are learning that now because they have the ability to look at that fish, cast on that fish, catch it and go, holy cow, are you kidding me? We ended up catching another fish that day suspended over 80 foot of water and it was 27 inches. And I'm like, okay, you know, and that was later in the year. You know, and so we talked a lot about that on the way home. We talked a lot about that this winter. And I seen some things in the last winter. I haven't ice fished hardly ever until Heidi told me to get the heck out of the house, bought me a snow dog. And of course, we're building right ice on. Rods now. And so I've been ice fishing. I've been seeing stuff that is not walleye. It's not what a walleye would do. So I think, but who am I, you know? So Garmin has not only taught me how to find fish, how to catch fish, but has taught me to put those memories aside, certain situations, and keep an open mind and cast on that fish. I didn't have nothing else to do anyway, so I'm waiting for her to catch that fish, and she did. But and it was so funny. I caught that fish. We put it in the box. She grabs her rod, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "That fish is still sitting there." Whack! Caught it. It ended up being a 23. We got both of them. you know, and it was like, so walleyes, you know, everybody has the same mentality. They're on the bottom, they're suspended, they're, you know, near structure, they're near this, they're near that. No, they're not. They're all over the place.
They're wherever they want to be.
So if you really, exactly right. If you really want to learn and you really want to go out there and get, put yourself out of that box, take two rods, a box full of, or, you know, a handful of jigs, a box of crawlers, a bucket of leeches, some plastics, some minnows, whatever, and go out there and just cast on fish. And you catch a walleye and you're like, holy cow, I would have not expected that. And then file that away and try it again and try it again and see if you can't duplicate that and try to learn some of that. And some guys don't want to. They just want to go out there and catch a limit of fish, have a fish fry and enjoy themselves. But,
oh, right, right.
You know, and that's absolutely perfectly fine. Absolutely. You know, that's, I mean, there's days I want to do that too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think that's true. You know, I think that, you know, anglers that, you know, decide they don't want to listen to this because, you know, they're not a tournament angler or whatever, like that's their own prerogative. I think, you know, just astute anglers that are trying to, you know, just learn things and are, you know, just passionate about fishing in general. You know, you listen to this, there's a lot of this stuff. There's just a huge takeaway for sure. And it might just be inspirational to think outside the box. You know, some of the technical information, breaking down water and utilizing forward sonar to do that is definitely, you know, something that a lot of people are still trying to learn for themselves and build confidence in. And hearing how you do it, I mean, that's a big takeaway for sure.
And I want to quick interrupt you real quick, Taylor, and I apologize. But honestly, Garmin is so plug and play easy. You don't have to sit there and mess with, plug it in, dial it in, go out to 70, 80 feet, you know, on a forward deal, for instance, or whatever the case is, and just put the settings on auto. They've gotten so good. Put the settings on auto and don't worry about, don't sit and look at all the, I mean, YouTube videos are great. I mean, obviously the world has completely changed, but don't sit and get hung up on how crystal clear our screens are. Dirty. Our screens are technically dirty. And because I turn up the gain, I turn up the color gain, the gain itself. And I don't care that I have interference and, but you can get on auto stuff and you might not have the crystal clear screen that you see on YouTube or on your buddies or whatever the case is, but don't worry about that. Just go out and fish and learn what the fish are doing. Pay attention to a little bit of that. And as you get a little bit more, you know, confident and going, okay, well, you know, I'm gonna start playing with the game. I'm gonna start playing with this and just start monkeying with stuff. And if it don't work, boop, go back, defaults, goes right back to auto and you're good to go. I mean, it's so easy. It really is. Garmin has made it so easy to plug and play that you don't need to be worried about all the technical stuff and that, you know, that quote clean screen. Go out there and have fun and learn.
Yeah, dude. I think, yeah, that going out there and doing it is the biggest thing. You know, I mean, it's like, I love talking about it. I like taking fish seriously. And myself, not so much, I think it's totally okay to take this stuff seriously. But at the end of the day, like, you know, all this garage fishing, all these conversations, like the real message definitely is once you get the technology, once you commit to that thing, it's all about time on the water. Figure out a way to work your job, figure out a way to do your projects at home when it's non-fishing time, because when fishing time comes, that's what you should be doing if you are dedicated.
Yeah.
That's definitely a big part of this. But before we close this out, I mean, we're going to end up running super long, but tell me a little bit about your rod business. I just want to, you know, kind of just give me a little bit of the overlook. I just want to kind of plug it a little bit and give it some love. I know it's something, it's really cool. You know, that you got that going here in Bismarck, and, you know, a lot of good anglers around here swear by your rod. So, I just want to spend a couple of minutes giving that some love.
That would be great. You know, as we got into tournament fishing, just like everybody else, it's like, you know, we want to get some sponsors and it's expensive. So, you know, I got hooked up with a guy, you know, good friend of mine, Jeff Nectarline out of Wisconsin, got me hooked up with his sponsor and the guy ran it for a year and it wasn't working out for him. And I love the rods. I love the feel of them. And so he closed it down. We ended up buying the company. I bought Heidi a birthday present, bought her a rod company, found out that his business model of ordering parts, sending them off to a builder and having them built, you know, pre-ordered, it didn't work. Guys didn't want to wait, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months for a rod. So I've been a cabinet builder for 30 years now, and building a rod is just a long cabinet. So we got hooked up with North Fork Composites, which is a Gary Loomis company. The people at North Fork have just treated us amazingly and gave us a ton of information. And we sat down and just started spinning rods and learning. And the guys in the industry, you know, Sea Guide, North Fork Composites, Batson Enterprises, they gave us the information, the technology to do it. Obviously, YouTube, you get on there, you watch how guys are doing it. And just like fishing, time behind the spinner. So we just started spinning rods, started advancing, started buying blanks, started trying new stuff. And now we have, you know, 2.5 years in, we got 3 different lines of rods. You know, we got a, you know, more of a weekender type entry level rod with no bells, no whistles, a 4-quart candle. It's an awesome blank. It's an awesome rod, but it's relatively inexpensive for guys that don't want to spend a ton of money and don't care what it looks like. You know, and then we have the high end stuff that is completely customizable colors and grips and whatever. You want to move your reel seat, you want to change the balance of it, you want to do whatever, we'll do it. It don't matter to me. I'll build you whatever you want. And you know, if we can, obviously, and I'm still learning a bunch of stuff but you know, all our blanks are made by North Fork Composites, which is a, you know, G. Loomis company in Washington State. They source everything right there. Their new material, they have this new blank. It's a C602. It's the material literally cannot be exported out of the United States because the material is deemed strategic. Huh. So we have a 7-foot medium light extra fast right now. I just sent one out to one of our team guys, Ted Miller, and it weighs in at 2.9 ounces. Between the carbon fiber grips and reel seat and the blank, it is incredibly light, super sensitive. The power, you know, the strength in it. I mean, it's awesome. So, and it's really become a passion project for me where I, you know, we're working 100 hours a week now between our regular jobs. Heidi's a teacher and raising a 2.5-year-old grandson. So it's a lot of time in here. We talk about it every place we go. We talk, you know, for me it anyway. And so, you know, we're building rods. We got rods all over the place. We got a small team of guys from New York to Montana. You know, we're supporting the Montana Walleye Series, the Fort Peck Championship Series, and it's really humbling for me to really get deep in as a tournament angler, and now a business owner. I'm trying to really support the guys that are out there trying to do it, and it's coming back. And you know, that whole support local thing is really, really hit home. It's not even so much support local anymore. It's support American made. And some of our stuff, you know, our guides are still coming from overseas, but our blanks, you know, we're building that right here. Our grips, North Fork Composites. So, you know, we're buying a lot of American made stuff. I'm turning them right here. I stand behind everything I build. You know, I build it. I have no excuse. If it goes out and something's wrong with it, I can't blame my lab for chewing up the grip or something. You know, it's one of those things. So no, it's pretty awesome, Taylor. And I'd love to, you know, let's figure out a time that we can go out in the boat. We'll throw a pile of rods up on the deck and throw the Garmin down and get you on some of these fish so you can really experience it. That's great.
Oh, man, I would love that. I mean, say no more there. We're kind of in the same zip code here. This is kind of, you know, we definitely got to meet up for something somewhere along the line.
I'm energized. Not only do I want to go fishing, I want to build some rods yet tonight too. So, yeah. You know, it's for sure. Let's put a plan together and get out there and get you a 30-incher.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude, that would be something. Even just to hang out and just to wet a line, I think that would definitely be. That's what we got to do, Darren. That's just what we got to do. And you know, I think hopefully, like Heidi can take the compliments as well. You know, I can relate to this with my wife and fishing and hunting things, the outdoors that I've gotten her into since we've been together. And you know, I try to be the same way with my wife and you know, just, or even with kids or just anybody, you know, just
I let her
make some decisions, let her do some, you know, whatever she wants to do. And, you know, we'll go check out this spot. Well, then we go, you know, we go there, and, you know, you never know what you can discover over there. And those are such great bonding moments. And sometimes it's hard when something really awesome happens. I try to compliment her tremendously on it, and it's hard for her to accept that, because she doesn't, you know, she doesn't know any different, you know. So hopefully right. Heidi can take some of those compliments, because those are really meaningful fish catches. You know, some of those experiences that you had, I mean, you wouldn't be, you know, you wouldn't be the team you were if she wasn't, you know, a full 50-50 player and all that. And I think that's great. And that's, you know, that's a husband and wife story. That can be anybody's story.
That's a teammate story, Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. It's just a team effort, but definitely when it, you know, somebody with a certain level of experience just doesn't know any better. That's the beauty of it. That's the magic of it all. Yep. But to hopefully she can take that compliment. I would like to pay her that compliment. That's really phenomenal stuff. And kudos to both of you. You know, to work together in that way, that should inspire just about anybody that's listening to this. Even, yeah, non-tournament anglers. I don't know. I repeat myself in that a lot because I try to represent non-tournament anglers. I'm just an amateur's amateur, but I really like talking to tournament anglers that, like you said earlier, you fish the tough conditions because you have to. That's not everybody, and there's so much to learn from that. You know, how to catch fish on tough bites and stuff. Yeah, so a lot goes into that. But, yeah, we'll definitely have to do this again, Darren. We'll be in touch, and we'll have to round this out because time is ready to go here. But I think this is a great story, man. I think your story is a great story, and you still got a lot of years left, so it'll be fun to kind of see how that goes. And the rod business is, that's cool. Like I said, there's a lot of people around that are really enjoying that product, and so, you know, if anybody's curious, to go check that out. But that being said, where, if somebody does want to check you out or has any questions or anything like that, where can people find you?
You know, we have a website. You can go on there, check some stuff out. Facebook, we try to keep up with you know, HDS Rods, HDSRods.com. We try to keep up with some of that stuff, and my cell number's on there. And literally, I mean, I love talking this stuff. So if somebody's got a question and they're not seen on the website or not seen on whatever, just pick up the phone and call me. And if I'm not, you know, if I'm not working, like I said, we still work day jobs, but I'll call you back. We'll talk through it. You know, and we'll get you put in a rod. If you don't like it, we'll get you put in something else. Well, you know, I don't want to sell somebody a rod that doesn't fit or doesn't whatever. So that's important to me too. I don't want, you know, I want to make sure that people that go out of here don't regret buying anything and they come back, you know? So it's hopefully a next career for me, and I can just keep rolling with this and live the American dream of owning my own company and being able to go fishing whenever I want.
Yeah. Hopefully you better not get too busy. You better not get too busy with that rod business. You're going to be, questioning. Be careful what you wish for, as they say. Right?
I'm already there, Taylor.
Right on. Well, Darren, let's sign it off, man. I really, really appreciate the time, and we're gonna be in touch. You got my number, and if you ever want to reach out, I'll definitely be using your number.